Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab tested, real results. Go to mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key, and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
As if they don't have too much on their plates, the Kings of Combat Sports podcast, John and Wade. They talk about the things they did that day. They'll analyze the work of Triple H.
Rewind to SmackDown.
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 And hello to all of our free audience listening to this over at YouTube and also at our free podcast feed at postwrestling.com. I am here. It is Wei Tang, and I'm joined by Neil Flanagan to close out Neil Week. Neil, say hello to the free audience.
Hello, free audience. Hope you're all keeping very well. It's the last you'll hear of me for a little while if you're sick of me. So,
how could people be sick of you? Come on. Somebody told me, I read somewhere, Neil, that they could listen to you. A listener of ours says that, let me get the exact quote. I could listen to Neil read the phone book. Have you ever considered that as a podcast?
Well, I suppose that's a very high praise. So thanks to whoever said that. But it's not something I've considered. You could get a really long podcast series out of it.
Maybe the next book club you and John do, you could consider your local phone book. I don't even know where you get phone books anymore. They certainly don't print them in my neighborhood.
Same here. No, I think I haven't had a phone directory delivered for maybe 10 years at this point.
I am addressing the free audience right now. And the free audience, might as well include everybody starting next week. Because in case you haven't heard, next week we're having a big open house in the Post Wrestling Cafe. For those of you who may have heard of it, postwrestlingcafe.com is our Patreon, and Patreon actually offers free tier memberships. This is just a way for them to get people, I guess, into their system so that they may someday consider upgrading to becoming a patron. And that's also where we occasionally may drop some freebies. Well, next week we're trying something brand new where we are going to give everything away for that week only, the first week of September. It is our open house week over at postwrestlingcafe.com, and that would include our series finale review of WWE Unreal that John and I have been covering every single week here. So we'll be talking about that releasing sometime next week. Also, it's an edition of Rewind Away covering Survivor Series 1993 as we talk about the Lex Express versus the Yokozuna team, the Hart family taking on the Knights, led by Shawn Michaels for a bizarre reason that we will discuss on this show. So that'll be very fascinating. Of course, we also have Post Pro Wrestling coming up next week as well with Karen and WH Park. Collision Course will be up as well. And then, of course, our XL Edition podcast of shows like this, Rewind to Raw, Rewind to SmackDown, where we, at the start, talk about news stories and also take your feedback towards the end. So go to postwrestlingcafe.com, sign up for a free account. If you happen to like next week, maybe consider signing on board and getting all of this stuff, including the archives featuring Neil Flanagan on a number of these shows. So
this is a fantastic offering you and John are doing, Wei, and it's worth pointing out, you know, this isn't one of these sort of, you know, your clock is ticking to your card being charged. You don't even need to enter payment details to get a free account on Patreon. And I have a vested interest, as does Jordan Goodman, because that's where the wellness policy and its audio form lives. You can watch it on YouTube, of course, but it's on the free tier of the post-wrestling Patreon. So I think this is a tremendous idea. People can sample the XL editions, especially for the first time.
So all of that starts on Monday. Again, postwrestlingcafe.com. Check that out. John Pollock will be back with me on Sunday evening, 10:30 p.m. Eastern, as we cover Clash in Paris over at youtube.com/postwrestling and also, of course, on our podcast feeds. But until then, we have an edition of SmackDown to talk about from Lyon, France, Neil. The WrestleTix, as of yesterday, had this at about 9,900. I'm sure it is well beyond that by the time the show started. They are calling this now officially, Neil, the greatest crowd in WWE history.
Yeah.
Officially. This is what Wade Barrett's exact words. We are now like the official greatest crowd in WWE history.
Yeah, and the birthplace of cinema as well. The accolades being showered on Lyon in France was something else tonight. So I think it's also a bit of an FU to people to say, or if not that, a challenge has been laid down.
Would you agree? Would you agree that this was the best crowd? Like, do you have a ranking of like best crowds in WWE history, or at the very least this year? Where does Lyon rank?
I will say when they were there last year. Particularly the AJ Styles song and all of that. I mean, I really, really did enjoy it. And they are a crowd that seems to have no downtime. It's a lot of fun. I suppose I should have a bit of home pride with Dublin last week. They did Ireland proud as well. But I can see the argument for this being at least one of.
They are certainly building up the reputation of these French crowds as like maybe even a level beyond, you know, what we're used to internationally. And you know what? Like to their credit, like Lyon completely delivered today. This was one of those shows where it felt like just the crowd was its own attraction.
Yeah.
And that was certainly evident in our opening segment this week. Featuring Logan Paul and John Cena. So Logan Paul is out. We get a bit of a recap of the, of course, sucker punch that took us off air last week. Of course, we didn't mention it, but they actually did air a retake of the scene on the USA broadcast. And presumably due to just what the initial one not looking as good, maybe contact being a little bit tighter on the second take than the first one. So that's what we replayed. This week,
and I found that interesting way at the time, you know, when it was, you know, the next day it was all over social media. Here's the original Netflix feed, and here's what was on the USA Network. I saw the Netflix version, and it didn't occur to me that the punch looked, you know, awful or, you know, missed by a mile or anything like that. I found it interesting that they reshot it.
Agreed. I mean, it's in wrestling, we get glancing blows quite often, right? So I didn't really think anything of the closing scene from last week on the Netflix version, but they did go through the effort of giving us a second take or a different take for USA. So Logan Paul is out, and he gets a ton of heat, of course, from Lyon. Says he goes on about being responsible for getting WWE on Netflix and ESPN, says he's brought in value about $6.6 billion to this company in TKO. So make sure you cite that in your sources next time. Says the WWE is becoming WWME. He represents the future. Cena represents the past. Paul starts getting more and more livid at this crowd. And something I didn't know about Logan Paul was that I don't think he's completely fluent. He actually does speak a certain level of French, and he's responding to the crowd here in French. Sounded good to me, and crowd still boos him. This is not a case where they're endeared by a man speaking their language. So out comes John Cena, who receives an amazing ovation, and this is where I have to say, Neil, I mean, can you, now that they are working with the crowds to give them the type of like nostalgic babyface moment and feeling that these crowds seem to want, these reactions are just, especially tonight, again, they feel like they are something that we're having to savor and able to savor, you know, the way that they're supposed to be.
Completely agree. And it was actually a note that I made during this entrance and the adoration of this crowd, the volume of the crowd. And I'd sort of thought to myself, I feel a little bit sorry for some of the crowds who had to have grumpy heel Cena during this retirement run, because this is the sort of ovation they want to give him. And for months we were stuck. This has been discussed to death, but however well the heel turn went as a moment on the night of Elimination Chamber, the heel run was bad. I think we can all agree on that at this point.
So Cena says Paul is a disruptor, but Cena is one of the original disruptors. He was the guy wearing jorts when he wasn't supposed to. He's the guy who first changed the look of the championship belt. He says he was knocking people out with brass knuckles 20 years ago, and he calls the Maverick Logan Paul a dollar store version of John Cena. Cena says Paul's influence is not what it was, and we all know it. He references a list of the top 25 influencers in the world that was recently released, and they include Drewski, Eyeshow Speed, Kai Cenat, they're all there, but Logan Paul's name is nowhere to be found. Mm-hmm. He says Logan was popular when he was 12. When he was 18, he did some battle raps, but now you're on the front page for all the wrong reasons. You're desperate and searching for a new revenue stream, and you're here to save your own ass. The crowd at this point, they're chanting a lot of things tonight. Much of it I couldn't make out. I don't know if you were anything notably popped out to you.
No, it was very difficult. My French is terrible for a start, so that doesn't help. And even though some of the chants were in English as well, some of this was just, I had no idea what the crowd were trying to say.
Cena at this point starts speaking French to appease the crowd, and he gets cheered for this. Paul then speaks something in French in response, and he looks very proud of the fact that he was able to say this in French, but this crowd just starts booing him. Cena says his French isn't polished, but he's real, and they see through Paul's fakeness. Cena goes into the crowd at this point. He starts talking about respect, and he says respect is when you say something bad to somebody and they know you're just having a bad day. He says respect is when you can apologize to that person the next time you see them. And so he goes into the crowd, and he finds the kid from the Brussels show, the famous at this point kid from the Brussels show, who happens to be in the front row of this show. Cena goes to the kid, brings the camera to him, and he says, I'm sorry. He says, I'm sorry, I was having a bad day. And he says, thank you for being there when I needed you the most. And he says, I love you too. Now, Neil, this was a very well-conceived moment. It was, I would argue, a fantastic moment to, you know, put into the closest promo. If not for the fact that this kid was just stuck on his phone the entire time, trying to record it. And, how symbolic of, I think, you know, our sort of modern relationship with technology, where like, man, once in a lifetime, John Cena picks you up from a crowd and a phone is between you two. But otherwise, what'd you think about all that?
That did stand out to me. It was very noticeable. And it's just, yeah, like you said, it's so emblematic of our times. You know, this was clearly going to be focused in on by professional TV cameras. No need to, you know, have your own screen in between. But as you said, a very cleverly conceived moment, you know. Obviously, this kid is not there by accident, you know. It's they wanted to go full circle with that moment, and he was very memeable at the time, you know, when he was pointed out in Brussels. So I enjoyed what they did here.
I also like how I guess we are slowly acknowledging the heel run having existed. I guess like we're kind of moving from like completely glossing it over and pretending it didn't exist at all to now he was having a bad day.
Yeah, it's just a series of bad days. Well, that's all it was.
Cena tells Paul to shape up within the next 24 hours because if he doesn't, he won't ruin wrestling. Wrestling will ruin you. I thought just another incredible promo from John Cena here. The man has been on fire ever since turning back into a babyface. Mm-hmm. I also felt like in this case, he was the first person to really address a vulnerability of Logan Paul's. You know, Logan Paul is the type of heel that could kind of like really bounce off of any sort of criticism you give off of him. But here, it's not like he'll sell this one so much either, but Cena is the first person to address a declining sort of influence in, as an influencer in his career, and I thought that sort of hit the right notes for Cena to have had some sort of effect on the heel. What about you?
I couldn't agree more. I thought this was a really clever line to take with Logan Paul, because we're living in an era where influencers and YouTubers come and go, and they're being replaced all the time. And I mean, Logan Paul is still a big name. It's kind of surprised he isn't in the top 25 still, because that's quite a high number of people. But there could be some creative math going on there. But either way, yes, he's hitting a nerve. You know, there is diminishing returns. You know, how many people are tuning into Impulsive compared to a year ago, for example. So I thought this was a really good line to take. And but it doesn't really hurt Paul either, because he's such a good heel, and he's very good at this. Whatever you think of the man as a human being, I think in the realm of particularly WWE and their sort of sports entertainment presentation, he is a great heel.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key, and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This week, it is our open house at postwrestlingcafe.com, where you get free access to sample all of our bonus shows for one entire week, including Way and I reviewing the final edition of WWE Unreal, Rewind Away covering Survivor Series 1993, and editions of Post Pro Res Collision Course and the XL versions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. Sign up on the free tier at postwrestlingcafe.com for open house week.
So I believe I've dug up the list that Cena was referring to. This was released by Rolling Stone, the 25 most influential social media influencers and creators of 2025, released 3 days ago. I don't think you'll have too much guesses, Neil. But number one, I Show Speed.
Okay,
I didn't realize he was that big of a deal. But there we go. Number one, I Show Speed. Number two, Drewski. Okay, so both of these guys with WWE presence over the past year. Miss Rachel at number three. I wonder what we're going to get her showing up.
Oh, we have to get her in a match. Something else.
She'll certainly be number one in my house. And you know what? I know Becky Lynch is a huge fan of hers. So if Becky could cut a promo on Miss Rachel in a promo segment, I'm sure she would.
That would be amazing. And in many, many houses, a lot of my friends with kids of a certain age, Ms. Rachel is you know, a superstar in their household.
Very much so. Number four, Kai Sinan, who also was, I believe, present at the Royal Rumble. So, you know, some WWE attachment there. Quelin Blackwell. I'm not familiar with her, but she's a comedian.
No.
So that's her top five. Anyway, then you're just talking about people I've never heard of before. Caleb Heron, have you?
No.
No?
No.
Mr. Beast. Okay, we know him.
Yeah. Yes.
Hassan Piker, I know him, a political streamer. Camila Araujo, an OnlyFans model.
Okay.
And then we got Alex Cooper rounding out our top 10. So I guess
I've heard of, I think, half of them.
Shows you how old we are. I would not know any of these guys unless, except for the WWE. So there we go.
Yeah.
So those are our top 10. We await to see how many of them make their way over to professional wrestling. We got our first match of the evening. Street Profits and B-Fab are in the back, and they have some words for Mellow Don't Miz. At this point, Bo Dallas crashes the interview. He is out of his Uncle Howdy gimmick. He asks the Street Profits if they're really family, and when the time comes, well, Ford will really find out if Dawkins is his brother. So they're now starting to introduce Bo Dallas, I guess, out of character as a way to interact with the other tag teams on this particular show beyond just having those sort of like creepy backstage promos. What did you think of this?
I thought it was interesting. It didn't really completely land with me. You know, I sort of thought it was somewhat odd, but I'm glad that they're trying something else than, as you said, the creepy sort of, you know, fuzzy footage with distorted voices, stuff that we've seen for weeks on end, which is just, a line of nonsense from each of the Wyatt Six. So to see, quite striking to see Bo Dallas just wander into shot, you know, as himself. Also, his resemblance to his brother in this kind of look that he has with the longer hair and the beard is really quite something. So in respect of wanting to try out something else, I think that's good, but it didn't really leave me with any sort of sense of that was awesome or, you know, more of this, please, either. I still find it all a bit difficult creatively, the Wyatt Six.
I find it a reminder that everything to do with the Wyatts, and this extends, you know, to even Bray Wyatt when he was around, but like everything to do with them is a constant experimentation, right? Like there's always some, I want to say struggle, but also some sort of like striving to find like the right fit for how to integrate this, you know, clearly very marketable, very valuable set of gimmicks into their writing proper. And tonally, certainly, like with this, like I would almost say cartoonish tone of this like tag team division, I suppose just having like the ghouls show up isn't going to offer much maybe meaningful dialogue. So I think this was a decent idea to try. Probably still have to work some things out to really kind of make this feel effective. But, you know, I'd be lying if I said like Bo Dallas has had a big presence on this show. Like, you know, even after the Wyatts have won the championship, like you barely even see him. So this gets him at least interacting. This gets him talking and gets him, you know, just becoming a bigger presence as a speaking voice for the champion. So we'll see what they do there.
And in that sense, it's a good thing because he's supposed, you know, it's supposed to be all about him, really, you know, and he is their leader. And yet we never see him wrestle, it feels like, you know, and he's always behind the mask. So, you know, worth a try. This is how I would grade it, I guess.
So we get what was supposed to be our actual first match, and that was set to be Alexa Bliss and Charlotte Flair taking on the Secret Service, Alba Fire and Piper Niven. This was announced beforehand. However, when the match, when Charlotte and Bliss are doing their walkouts, Chelsea Green and Alba Fire come out and they attack the two of them from behind, chopping Charlotte's knee and taking Charlotte out. We come back and the match has now been changed to an Alexa Bliss versus Chelsea Green singles match. So they later tell us that Piper Niven is in fact not here. Cole says she was not medically cleared. Mm-hmm. And Chelsea just cost her team a tag title shot with the attack. And Cole calls this out and basically, you know, says that they screwed up. So kind of bizarre. I mean, if we were to believe the announcers, then I guess it means Piper, for whatever reason, was not medically cleared after last week. So instead, we have Alexa versus Chelsea.
I find this really weird. Of course, it's only speculation. But my speculation might be that Charlotte isn't perhaps 100% because, you know, I really did expect this to be a tag title match, like they build, you know, and they did this.
But then why wouldn't Piper be here to take on Alexa?
Oh, of course, yeah, that's a very good point. I suppose they could have done a Freebird type thing with Alba, perhaps, but
yeah,
that's the answer, isn't it? Piper wasn't well enough, or you know, is perhaps not. If we take that at face value, not medically cleared, then yeah, you can't have.
We don't know at present. I'm sure we'll find out in the days to come. Could be as simple as what they tell us in that Piper Niven is not medically cleared. In either case, we have Alexa versus Chelsea, and you know what? For losing a title match, I don't think this crowd minded one bit because they were incredibly hot for this one. And certainly it's helped by the star power of a Chelsea Green and how well she's able to play with any sort of baby face that opposes her. So Chelsea takes control as we go to break. Everything these two are doing is receiving, I would say, a pretty incredible reaction, you know, whether it be the yay boo or Bliss's comeback. And it just certainly speaks to like the specialty of this crowd, why talent speaks so highly of French crowds, because you can certainly assume that these two are having a lot of fun performing in front of a crowd like this. Chelsea is put in the Tree of Woe. Bliss delivers a front dropkick to her. As she goes for the twisted Bliss, Fire tries to distract her. Chelsea is able to get her knees up. She goes for the unprettier. Alexa avoids it, goes for the Sister Abigail, and both are countered. It leads to a series of standing switches before we get a roll-up win from Alexa Bliss, where I have to say, Neil, I felt for the most part this was a bit of an average match that was elevated to a very good match by this very strong crowd, who again didn't seem to mind that they didn't get a title match. What did you think yourself?
Yeah, I'm just going to echo your sentiments. I thought this was a kind of bog standard, you know, average SmackDown match that had it been in. I don't want to name and shame, and you know, had it been in, you know, a
Buffalo,
town.
New York, though.
That's all right.
All right, we're all thinking it.
Buffalo, New York, the crowd might have been fairly silent for. But they elevated this into something that it had no right to be, really, because, as you say, fairly average wrestling match.
I love Buffalo. You know,
I apologize. And I've been to Buffalo when I was visiting Niagara Falls. I had a wonderful time.
So afterwards, Charlotte comes back with her bad knee to come and save Alexa. Chelsea hits her with the unprettier. Unfortunately, that one did not look very good. It was unfortunately a bit mistimed and not very good looking. Alba hits Alexa with the gory bomb. So if you're keeping score, we had Piper beat Charlotte. Now Alexa has beaten Chelsea. And somehow the announcers hint that we are still building towards a tag title match between these two teams. So for whatever reason this was delayed, I guess we can expect it to occur at some point, despite Alexa having beaten Chelsea here.
Yeah, it certainly just feels like something they're storing up for an episode of TV.
Yeah, could be.
Whenever they get to it.
So we get an interview here in the back with Sami Zayn. Sami says that he didn't always feel like the greatest version of himself towards the end of his stay at Raw. He was at that point showing a lot of self-doubt. Says he's not feeling any of that now. Now he is feeling like when he main evented WrestleMania, he's feeling like the way he felt when he beat Gunther at WrestleMania, and he speaks some French to Leon, and the crowd reacts really well for him. Yes. So Sami Zayn versus Solo Sikoa for the U.S. Championship later on tonight. We hear from Aleister Black inside, his dark room. He says some very threatening words to Damian Priest. We come back and Damian Priest responds. He says, unlike Black, I don't make empty threats. I'm going to enjoy every bit of violence I'm going to inflict on you. I'm sorry, that was not a very descriptive recap. And that's because I just found their trash talk incredibly generic. And I really...
I agree. This was from kind of a, you know, maybe 5 years ago, promo generator machine. It felt like this was Aleister Black back in his little room from his first run before he left this company. You know, all this, I am going to cut the cord of mortality or something. I took a few notes of some of it, but again, it just felt like, What?
You know, cut the cord of mortality. I don't think he actually but that sounds like something.
Maybe morality. I forget. I don't know. Maybe I've taken the notes down wrong. Either way, it's kind of, you know, this book.
I could have transcribed
Tales of the Dark, whatever. And there was dramatic music throughout the entire speech as well. And it took me out of the whole thing. I was like, what is this? You know,
I'm curious to know if how good of a job AI could do of giving me an Aleister Black promo. Give me an Aleister Black sample promo. Let me just type in here. Okay, it's thinking. Here's a sample Aleister Black promo capturing the dark poetic style he's known for. I have revived in hues of deep blue and gray, unfolding terrors and whispering fire. The pale ashen reaper comes back, echoing in profound stillness, nourish my expressions of uninvited chaos. Thank you. Perplexity is what I use for that. I could buy it.
Absolutely buy it. By that being said, by the, you know, in this environment with the spooky music and the book in his hand on next week's SmackDown, and I don't think anyone would bat an eye.
I really do feel like both he and Rusev have come, you know, like Black has always had this. Rusev developed it while in AEW, and they brought it over to the WWE pretty much at the same time. They get like good production. You know, these things look cool. They sound good to the ear, but they, to me, never make any sort of impact. And I think like Bray Wyatt had to struggle with this a lot, yeah. Where you can have a promo that looks and sounds really good, but if it's so like poetic and just kind of like overly stylistic, you just ultimately fail to connect with an audience. And that's kind of what I'm feeling, both with this promo and also just the feud in itself, which has not really done much to me grab my interest.
Agreed. And the only bit I enjoyed about this was Priest sort of throwing back to Michael Cole and the desk.
Mm-hmm. And R-Truth seems at this point separate from it until he goes back, maybe. So,
yeah,
we'll see if that connects.
At the moment.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling. We get our next match here. It is Meechan taking on Kiana James. Kiana James' first TV match since June of 2024.
What a classic we're in for.
If you want to consider this a match. Of course, Kiana James is accompanied by Julia. James attempts to use a loaded purse right as the bell rings. And maybe she should have tried a few seconds earlier before the bell rung, because this is now the official start of the match, and Meechan immediately avoids, rolls her up, and we get a flash victory in 7 seconds here. So Meechan has earned her title shot, and I guess if you're waiting to see and assess Kiana James' improvements in ring, you're still going to have to wait a little bit longer here for a flash pin.
I mean, until we get to the post-match, I really dislike this. Completely, particularly as it pertains to Julia. You know, we get this very grand Titantron kind of helicopter music for Kiana James, and she gets her entrance. Then the match, you know, takes far less time than that. It's, you know, one or two seconds or something. And in all of this, until we get to the post-match, Julia is just sort of almost there in a role reversal spot. This does get corrected by the end of all of this, but she's just sort of standing in the ropes beside Kiana James as though she's the manager. I just felt this was all backwards and does Julia no good whatsoever.
Yeah, I really do feel like, I mean, Julia, her greatest attribute is her in-ring ability, and to withhold that, I don't understand why. Like, she's exactly the type of wrestler you want to showcase every single week on television to establish her, right? Much in the way that you've done for the tag team division. I understand wanting to give Kiana James some sort of role, you know, some sort of like greater presence on the show, but I think it's coming at the expense of Julia, and it's diminished Julia, I would say, greatly in this time. So, as Neil mentioned, we have a post-match angle where Julia immediately attacks Meechan and kicks her face into the steps. So, that is the setup for our match coming up. Well, whenever. They have not announced when this match is yet. Yeah. So, yeah. And I don't know, does this tell you what that they might not have greater ambitions of pushing James as an actual wrestler? Any thoughts on that?
That's what I took from this. She may want to sort of get her own back at some point, but it's difficult to see this going anywhere other than Meechan gets the title shot, loses, and maybe they're on to another program, hopefully something much better presentationally for Julia.
Mm. So at this point, Drew McIntyre comes out. Drew McIntyre wants to, he confronts Michael Cole and asks if Michael Cole has an update on Cody Rhodes. Well, Cole says no. And I'm thinking, I mean, isn't it obvious he's out of here just to take care of a new baby?
Yeah.
But that's probably the real reason here. Drew calls Randy out. Drew says, Cody isn't your friend. He's a politician. He says Cody was checking in on Randy every day during his injury, but he wasn't trying to be a friend. He was just simply gathering intel. He says, when you hesitated to punt Cody, Cody did not hesitate to attack your back because Orton, you gave Cody all the answers. Orton says he didn't attack Drew for Cody last week. He did it because Drew's a prick. At this point, Drew delivers a Glasgow kiss to Randy Orton. Orton fights back, and a bunch of security come in, and he ends up RKOing a bunch of them, including Hurricane Helms. So he shows that he's about to punt Drew, but Drew at this point escapes. What did you think about the segment and interaction?
I thought it was interesting in a few ways. First of all, Drew seemed pretty popular with the crowd until Randy came out. He wasn't getting audibly booed at all. They seemed quite into him. I also felt that Drew got very little out of this. He lands the headbutt and knocks Randy down. But from then on, Randy's kicking his ass. You know, the draping DDT and the RKOs, everyone. And then he sets up for the punt, which, Drew rolls out of the way to escape from. So, I mean, I'm fine with this pairing of the two, but I sort of felt like Drew was maybe somewhat shortchanged in this encounter. Apart from the headbutt, he really didn't get much in there, and the promo battle was a bit didn't really land with me very much. You know, trying to persuade Randy that, you know, Cody's not really his friend, just, you know, didn't really feel authentic.
With the frequent mentions of Cody to Cole, continuing to bring Cody up, I mean, I do see this as a fairly obvious sign that we're, you know, it's just a precursor to Cody versus Drew. So I understand maybe having to continually, like, bring Cody up, and that's probably diminishing the how valuable or just how important this Randy Orton feud ultimately is. At the same time, I think there's certainly like a level of like personal insult and just like line crossing that we've yet to see from this version of Drew McIntyre against Randy Orton. I do kind of miss that. You know, I think these promos could be a lot more scathing, a lot more personal, and a lot more interesting. And it's just not hit that for me yet.
Yeah.
So that's that. Mello don't miss. There in the back, Mello tells Miz that he can't steal his win again like he has in previous weeks. Miz says it's not a you or me thing, it's an us thing. At this point, they're interrupted by Bo Dallas, who says, perception isn't always reality. Can you handle that? And Mello says, don't write a reality check that you can't cash.
Yeah. This interaction was short enough for me to be able to write down in full, and it still kind of doesn't make a huge amount of sense to me.
a reality check, I guess. And he made a little pun here, a double entendre.
I suppose.
Reality check.
Interesting to have Mello be so unfazed by Uncle Howdy / Bo Dallas here, just to sort of sit, you know, tell him more or less to F off. You know, it's don't write a check that you can't cash.
Yeah, I hate the line. I hate like whenever, like, I don't know, like, it just does not sound like something that a man would say to somebody else.
No,
it's fine. It's okay. But hardly good, I would even say.
Yeah, stamming with faint praise. It is the wrestling promo verbiage like that you just, no one ever says in real life. I think the word audacity was used several times tonight. That's another one that always gets me. I think it was in that, like, when you're having an argument with someone, you know, you have the audacity to tell me, you know, and it's kind of like, when have you ever heard anyone actually say that to somebody in real life?
Must be one of those words that like looks really good on paper that just happens to come out. Well, if you're looking for a natural interaction, you'll maybe look no further than the next segment here, because backstage, Randy Orton is being yelled at by Nick Aldis. Mm-hmm. And Orton apologizes to Aldis for attacking his security. And then he hands Aldis, I guess, like a little sort of like airline bottle of Fireball whiskey. Yeah. And says, "Have you tried this?" And Aldis says, "No, I haven't." So R-Truth then interrupts, asks Aldis if he's about to drink that. Aldis says, after the day he's had, "Yes, I'm going to." And R-Truth says, "Are you sure you don't have anything else?" And he leaves. Even as a bit of like very forced product placement, I mean, it's like zero effort was put into this. The R-Truth interaction, typically you would expect some sort of punchline. That didn't even, unless I'm really missing something here, that didn't exist for me here either.
I can confirm you're missing nothing. Wait, I rewind this because I thought I had missed some, you know, clever joke or pun. And no, it's just Randy telling Aldis it's the best whiskey in America. Aldis looks very enamored with this whiskey. And then R-Truth says something fairly meaningless and that's it. And as you say, like absolutely no effort whatsoever. Clearly they simply wanted this little bottle of whiskey on screen and that's it. And that's all they cared about doing.
I would honestly argue that like this sort of like very forced, very lazy form of product placement does more harm to a product than, you know, like I would say even what, well, they at least tried with like the ladder at Money in the Bank the last time they were promoting this thing. That offered something, but this offered nothing except negativity, in my opinion, towards the brand. But whatever. I'm sure they made a lot of zeros off of this. This was awful. And again, R-Truth at this point, I mean, he was teasing some sort of like split personality gimmick between this and Ron Killings. That seems to have been, at least this week, completely nullified. Hat was backwards even. Yeah. Everybody okay? And he was still R-Truth, so that isn't even a device that they're even using here.
No.
So whatever. I don't sense much disappointment from you, Neil.
Not really. We'll see what they do with them with R-Truth next week again. You'll have another three-second segment where he says something.
They don't even trust him with the product placement here. He could have had a much more fun interaction, I think, with all this. So we got our match here. It's Mello Don't Miz taking on Street Profits. The winners receive a title shot against the Wyatts, and they announce that the match will take place at Clash in Paris. So we have another match added to the card. Miz hangs onto Dawkins' leg, and this allows for Mello to hit nothing but net, taking us to commercial. We get a lot of chants from this crowd, including Miz is awesome chants. Yeah. Lots of Mello chants from this crowd. But they're also very fond of the Street Profits, too. They're chanting for the Profits' music all throughout commercial breaks, so they simply love everybody. Of course, they're also doing the simplement deux after every two count here, which during commercial, Barrett and Cole were struggling to decipher. Ford goes for the from the heavens to the Miz, but he, in doing so, missed a tag Mello made to the Miz. So Mello follows up with his own frog splash immediately. The crowd is very hot. At this point, the Wyatts in full getup come out. They are distracting the Miz. So you see, like, Miz is not scared of Bo Dallas at all. But when he sees him in the makeup, then things are very different. The Profits delivered the revelation to Mello in the midst of all of this. And the Profits get the win here. So they get the tag title shot against the Wyatts at Clash in Paris.
Yeah, again, a very ordinary match. That the crowd elevated, and as you mentioned, Wei, I was watching this live, so got the sort of the in commercial part of the match as well, and enjoyed all of that because the crowd. I kind of like it when the crowd decide, hey, we like all these guys, you know, and they're doing some fairly interesting or unique chants, you know. They're chanting for Mello, they're chanting for Miz or Miz, and they're loving the Profits too, and I thought all of that was kind of fun and elevated what was pretty ordinary match with, again, this silly I'm sorry. I just don't like the way it's this silly sort of distraction part at the end where they all come out and spook everybody and then stand in the ring opposite them. I find it so hard to care about any of this.
Yeah. Honestly, not much to any of this stuff. Like the most special thing you might want to tune into most of this for is for the crowd. So that was to me also very evident for a match like this. We go to the back now. Tiffany Stratton is with Jade Cargill. Jade informs Tiffany that she is now the number one contender after scoring the pinfall in their tag team match last week. So they start arguing about who's better. Jade says the fantasy that you were ever on the same level as me will die. So no announcement of when the match will be either, right?
No. No. Yeah. I half expected this to be a late addition to the show on Sunday, but it definitely isn't. Quite enjoyed this as a little promo segment. And Jade does sort of, you know, I don't want to try imitate her, but she does the kind of put downs really rather well, I feel like, you know, and gives great face, you know, in some of this. So I don't mind this at all, this pairing between the two. And I think it's interesting that it's going to be interesting to see who the crowd really pull for, because Jade hasn't gone full heel at all at this, for my money at least, at this point. Mm-hmm. So these are two baby faces still. I think it'll be interesting when they get to it. They're going to have to change that dynamic a wee bit to make it more interesting.
So expect that rematch at some point. I mean, they do have a lot of shows to book coming up, so we can expect it on TV. We can expect it at Saturday night's main event. Could be, you know, and really a number of shows.
This week, it is our open house at postwrestlingcafe.com where you get free access to sample all of our bonus shows for one entire week, including Way and I reviewing the final edition of WWE Unreal, Rewind Away covering Survivor Series 1993, and editions of Post Pro Res Collision Course and the XL versions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. Sign up on the free tier at postwrestlingcafe.com for open house week.
For the U.S. Championship, this is our main event. It is Solo Sikoa defending against Sami Zayn. We go through a commercial with Solo in control. Come back, Sami delivers a big topic on Hero. The MFTs then attack him on the floor, leading to a spinning Solo for a two count. But of course, out comes Big Jim. He quickly gets beaten down. But then here comes Jacob Fatu, attacking Tala Tonga from the timekeeper's area. The babyfaces drag the MFT out of the arena. Sami then delivers a blue thunderbomb for a 2.5 count. Solo escapes the Huluva kick. He lures Sami to the announce desk where he hits him with the spinning Solo onto the desk. After a second commercial break, Sami delivers a sunset bomb for a 2 count. He avoids the Samoan spike. He delivers the Huluva kick and then delivers one more Huluva kick as Sami Zayn wins the U.S. Championship, garnering a huge reaction from this crowd in what I thought was a very good match, Neil, and one of Solo Sikoa's better matches here. And, of course, a very great performance from Sami Zayn and an incredible soundtrack to it all from London. Or, sorry, Lyon, sorry.
Absolutely, no. I agree entirely. This was by a mile the wrestling match of the show. It was a very good match. Sami is a tremendous worker anyway, so you kind of expect that from him. But I agree with you that Solo, I think, sort of upped his game for this one. Part of that is working with Sami Zayn, I have no doubt. But he was convincing in this, I think, you know, in a way that sometimes he isn't. And he didn't have to lean too much on the MFTs because they were neutralized pretty early on by Jacob and Jimmy and sort of ran off into the crowd. And I thought that's all to the good. So I was somewhat surprised by this result. Not shocked, you know, to my very core or anything, because this title is still fairly low down the pecking order, but hopefully Sami can do something with it. It's nice to see him with a title. It feels very much as though creatively he was on track for something like this on perhaps the world, if not the WWE title, but the world title perhaps. Mm-hmm. They've changed tack to the US title. He was super over with this crowd who elevated everything that happened. And, you know, this was clearly the highlight of the whole show. The one thing I found most interesting about it was looking at the clock and realizing that there were like 4 or 5 minutes left of the show. And I was really waiting for an angle to happen whenever the credits came up. So I think they were perhaps just a little bit ahead of schedule, or there's a reason on USA Network tonight why, why they had to finish when they did it. They could always pad it out because it's not going to air for a little while.
I'm sure there's a commercial or two or a Fireball whiskey ad they can fit in there if they really wanted to, to pat the show out. Yeah. Zayn winning the U.S. Championship, I guess I didn't expect it to come this early either, in his feud with Solo. I expected maybe a bit more of a chase. This felt as much of a sort of reward, if you want to call it that, for Leon.
Yes.
And also as much as a reason for Sammy to get a big one in front of an incredible sounding crowd. But I have to say, it didn't necessarily feel like this title was coveted or earned from Zayn. He was after the world championship, and then he already technically earned a shot against Solo Sikoa because he had already beaten Solo, but said nothing about wanting a championship. It was almost like, oh, by the way, I want this now. And just wanted pretty much on the first shot. So it doesn't certainly feel nearly as satisfying as his win over Gunther for the Intercontinental Championship. And I do feel like it's a bit of a step down for Sami Zayn to be at this level. At the same time, you look at who's holding these championships. It's Cody Rhodes. It's on the other side, it's Gunther. And Sammy is clearly not going to be in their realm really anytime soon. So this might be the best that he's going to get right now. And but not so bad. But who do you expect him to continue to feud with over this?
I wonder whether it'll be someone else within this sort of MFT group. Or what it does. It's a difficult question to answer, Wei, because as you've just alluded to, this felt quite rushed to get to this point. I, like you, think that this was to give that crowd that they're very fond of and they wanted to sort of put over at the very beginning of the show as the best crowd, to give them a really big moment. But I also am with you that this title doesn't feel like much. And even when when the fireworks go off toward the end of the show, after Sammy's hoisting up the belt, it feels almost out of place, because the title isn't all that, particularly when you consider that he had his eyes very much set on a world championship. And of the secondary titles, this is the one that means the least, I think.
Most interesting to me, for opponents for Sammy, I think would be Jacob Fatu. Since teaming together, they seem fine. They seem to have worked out their differences. I mean, Jacob helped Sammy tonight, but I just think that combination would probably be the most interesting of really anybody of this tier of star right now. And I would love to see those tensions continue to be explored between them, with Jay Cotton in the middle. Jimmy Cotton in the middle. Yeah.
When you think of the group of people involved in this match, either, on the heel sides, as lackeys, or as though the people who helped Sammy, I agree with you that I think it's the match I would like to see the most is Jacob Fatu versus Sami Zayn. I think that would be a really good wrestling match. And it would be interesting to see how they get to that. I've no doubt they've got some plans, but again, this felt like a very rushed coronation.
So your thoughts on SmackDown from Lyon in front of the greatest crowd in WWE?
Yeah. A above average episode of SmackDown, I suppose, but only just elevated to well above average by the crowd. And it just goes to show what a really hot crowd who are really into everything they're seeing can do, to a television show. Because if this had been in, and I'm not going to go after Buffalo again, but somewhere in the States, with a less than hot crowd, I would have had a very different attitude to what the show delivered.
All right, so Clash in Paris. We're up to 6 matches as of present time, and that seems to be a pretty full card, I would say, for a WWE PLE. And those matches are, of course, John Cena versus Logan Paul. We got Seth Rollins versus CM Punk versus Jey Uso versus LA Knight for the World Heavyweight Championship. I mistakenly said Gunther was the champion. It's Rollins. Sheamus versus Rusev in a good old fashioned Donnybrook match. Roman Reigns versus Bronson Reed. And then we got Becky Lynch versus Nikki Bella for the Women's Intercontinental Championship. And then just added Wyatt Six taking on the Street Profits for the WWE Tag Team Championship.
It's not a blowaway card, is it, Way? It really feels a little bit like a stopping, a traffic stop on the way to a Wrestlepalooza, which I'm guessing as soon as this out of the way, they're really going to start building to because of the ESPN connection and all of that. I mean, Sheamus versus Rusev, I just don't care. I think Rusev will win because I think that's kind of Sheamus's gatekeeping role right now, but I don't think it does a lot for him. These Donnybrook matches, you know, whatever. Becky versus Nikki, I'm kind of into because I've enjoyed the build so much. Like you guys have been talking about on Rewind or Raw. Dexter Lumis and Joe Gacy versus the Street Profits, it's not something that fills me with anticipation. I think once you get to the top of the card, Cena and Paul is interesting. And Rollins, Punk, Uso and Knight in the four-way, I think, you know, that has potential to be very good too. But to me, it's a two-match card in that respect. You know, Reigns and Reed, of course, is the other one, but it feels like a foregone conclusion.
Yes,
very hard to see Reed winning that match.
Yeah, I would say for that match, Reigns versus Reed, I think they definitely overachieved like their status, or at least a status of a Bronson Reed, you know, mismatch against somebody the stature of a Roman Reigns. You know, they've certainly made that way more interesting than I think we would have given them credit for. I think Cena versus Paul represents like a pretty high like star power driven match that makes this event feel special. I'd say similar for Lynch versus Nikki Bella, where I think there's the potential to maybe it feels a bit more special, and maybe that's just me because I'm a big Nikki Bella fan. But I also think that they've done great work with their promos. That's really elevated that one. Beyond that, Rollins retaining the championship feels quite obvious to me in that four-way, just because he's won it so recently and because everybody tends to cancel each other out. But I'm also curious what program Rollins moves into beyond this match and with who, whether it be among this crop or with the Roman Reigns. So we'll see how they get there. John and I will be back 10:30 p.m. Eastern time on Sunday evening at youtube.com/postwrestling, and then later on our free feeds, of course, to talk all about Clash in Paris. Neil, thank you so much for joining us on the free side of things. We're going to head over to the Post Wrestling Cafe to read some feedback. Any plugs or anything you want to give out?
Not really. If you want to look back at this week's programming, there's more than enough of me, and I think that's the plug is that I'll be sort of resting for a little while.
I'm very glad we could have done this at a more convenient time for you, Neil, because usually I almost lose sight of the idea that you have to stay up to like 5 a.m. to do these shows with me often. So
I probably still will. There's some stuff I'm catching up on Netflix and whatnot way. So but it's nice to do it. Yeah, at a time that's but often when we finish, daylight is beginning to break.
Oh man, brutal. Well, let's not waste any more time. Let's jump over to the feedback at forum.postwrestling.com.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Life is unpredictable, but how you prepare for the unexpected shouldn't be. Take ownership of your life planning with Policy Genius to help your loved ones have a financial safety net in case something happens to you. Whether to cover debts and routine expenses or even invest the money and earn interest over time, With Policy Genius, finding and buying life insurance is simple. You can compare quotes from top insurers and could find coverage that fits your needs and your budget. Plus, they offer life insurance policies starting at just $276 a year for $1 million in coverage. It's an easy way to feel good about and plan for the future. No wonder Policy Genius is the country's leading online insurance marketplace. Don't wait for life to make other plans. Protect your family today. Head to PolicyGenius.com to compare top-rated life insurance policies, get your lowest quote, and make a smart move in under 10 minutes. That's PolicyGenius.com.